Sorted Digital Ramblings Podcast, brought to you by Click Through Marketing.
Hello, it's very nearly Christmas, so we thought we'd give you an early present. A new episode of the Sorted Digital Ramblings Podcast. This month we're going to be discussing the big event that's just around the corner, delving into topics surrounding digital paid media and much more. I'm Chris, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Olivia, or Liv.
Hello.
How are you, Liv? How's your month been?
I'm good, thanks. It's been very good. I mean, off the back of Black Friday, which was absolutely disgustingly busy. But yeah, good stuff. Had my 21st birthday last week. Everyone knows, it's on the 7th of December, so next year you can wish me happy birthday. But yeah, had a great time.
I heard there was a fair old knees up on the Black Friday night.
There was a fair old knees up. I don't think it was going to be as big of a knees up as expected, but I think, well, I didn't get back in until half three. Sarah had a taxi home. Sorry, we're going to introduce you in a minute, Sarah, but Sarah got a taxi home, so I dread to think what time Sarah got back. But yeah, it was a pretty big one. Did not expect it to be that big, but yeah. Anyway, I'll introduce Sarah, considering I've been name dropping. But hey, Sarah.
Hello, Liv. Hello, Chris. How are you both?
Good, thank you. Good.
Good.
Introduce yourself to us, Sarah. Tell us who you are, what you do.
Okay, so I am Sarah. I'm head of digital paid media here at Clickthrough. So I look after all four of our paid specialisms. So across PPC, display and programmatic, paid social and Amazon. And make sure that across all four services, we're providing the best experience for clients and developing forward the products in line with the industry.
Brilliant, thank you. It's a very professional introduction. Before we get onto the professional stuff, we like to get to know our guests personally a little bit more. So if you were to do any job outside of digital marketing, because of course digital marketing is your dream career, what would you do and why?
Oh, this is a difficult one. My mom always thought I was going to be a vet. So for her whole life and for my entire upbringing, she was convinced I was going to be a vet, and then was probably devastated when I went and did psychology at university instead. But I think if I were to change now, I would be a paramedic.
Oh, that would suit you. Yeah.
I quite like to do that, but I also don't like blood. So it could be a bit of a stumbling
so that's
block.
That's not going to work.
No, it's not, is it? Or injections. I couldn't give someone an injection either, so yeah. Liv, have you got a question for Sarah?
I do. It's a random one, and I already know the answer, but really it's just to raise awareness of everyone else to this answer. Do you have a topic of, like, I don't know, I was going to say understanding. Do you know something, like, a lot about one topic that not, like, many other people know about? And I already know the answer.
Your specialist subject.
Yeah, like, what would you do on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? No, not, well, not that one. Is it that one?
Mastermind.
Yeah, I know where this is going, and I know you've only asked me this question because it's probably the weirdest answer that anyone is ever going to give. But I have a really bizarre level of knowledge about plane crashes, where I have a favourite plane crash, which sounds terrible to say, but it's just the one that I'm most interested in and know the most about. So that is my, like, random trivia, is that I can just throw random aeroplane and aviation facts out there.
I love it.
I mean, that is incredibly random. Which is your favourite plane crash? We've got to ask.
My favourite plane crash is the mid-air collision at Ubelingen in 2002. Research it. It's a good one.
It's a good one. It's a good one. Loads of people died.
Have you seen the TikTok channel, and it, like, shows you plane crashes? I find those really interesting. And then at the top it says, like, how many survivors they have and how many deaths.
I mean, I feel like I should put it out there. Like, I'm not interested in them because people die. Like, that's not the level. I'm just interested in why they happen.
Oh, I just thought, okay. Have you heard that riddle as well? And it's like, I can't even remember what it is, but it's about a plane crash and you have to say how many people were buried. No. Okay. Next.
Is it the one where it like lands in a cemetery or something?
No, but it's like, you think it's that and it's not. It's because, I don't know. It's like about, it's about birthdays or something. Maybe I should have prepared that a little bit better. I'll have a
maybe
think.
Google it. We'll come back to that one. Okay. On the subject of plane crashes and so, what do you think happened with the, you know, that plane that disappeared somewhere? It's in like Australia way. Do you know what I mean? It's like a, what's your theory there? You must have a theory on that as a plane crash enthusiast.
Yeah. So it's in the ocean, right? I feel like that's the easiest explanation for it. I want to say that it's a mechanical fault, although most air crashes are caused by pilot error, which is kind of terrifying to think about. And that's so much more difficult to find out if you can't find like the black boxes afterwards. But I would like to think it was just a mechanical error and it ended up in the ocean and that's where it is.
But why has it never been found?
Because the ocean's a big place.
Well, that's a fair point. Yeah. That is a fair point. Anyway, from plane crashes into the world of digital paid media, it's the most natural transition in the world, obviously. We're going to be talking all things digital paid media today. Everything encompasses its importance to an overarching marketing strategy and more. And who better to do that than Sarah? So talk to me a little bit about digital paid media, Sarah, what it involves, why it's important, how it sits with other channels as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So digital paid media it's a little bit of a buzzword because obviously we kind of use it to encompass all four of the paid channels. But essentially it's any kind of paid advertising online. And although we group it into those four, there is some overlap between them. So it's anywhere where you go online and you're on a website or on social media or searching on Google, and a little ad pops up, whether that's kind of a text ad, image ad, video ad, whatever that might be. I think the reason why it's important is because, and this is the reason why I chose kind of paid to get into as my specialism, is because it's measurable. So that's the thing that for me that's always been really valuable, is that we can put activity live. It kind of starts up right away. There's no waiting. Kind of the ad appears as soon as you want it to. And then it's all kind of monitorable and measurable off the back of that. So it means we can see how many times the ad's been seen, how many times it's been clicked on, and then ultimately how many of those people have gone through to the website and then completed the action that the client is looking for. So whether that's a sale or a lead form completion. And that to me is really important because it means that the activity that we're running, we can really see the impact that it's having, and how it's ultimately affecting kind of clients' bottom lines, which is kind of the focus for any business. When it comes to sitting amongst the other channels, so all of the paid channels work pretty well together, because they all have slightly different goals. So we always say that PPC is pretty direct response in terms of its approach, because we're kind of relying on people searching in Google and then we're popping up an ad based on what we know they're looking for, versus kind of social, which can be more awareness led, where we're kind of targeting people who we know have a specific interest or might be interested in a competitor, but we don't know that they want a certain product. So those all fit together quite nicely because we can show kind of different ads at different stages to make sure that we are ultimately driving people closer to conversion. And then it can also interact nicely with some of the other channels. So we can do some cool things with PPC and SEO, as an example, where if we know we're kind of not as high on rankings for SEO, we can make sure we're present for PPC. And if we already know we're high from an SEO perspective and there are no competitors on the landscape, then we can pull back on PPC and put that budget elsewhere. So I think it kind of works pretty well together, and like Liv, I guess for you, your kind of specialism is in paid social. So how comfortable do you feel with the other channels and how they fit into the mix?
Do you know what? I recently, so at the start of the year, I was like, yeah, paid social's it. Like, I don't want to look at PPC, I don't want to look at Amazon. And then now, just like being on calls with people from like the different channels and not paid media, I've sort of picked up the lingo. So like, I'll be going through strategy with a client and then I'll be like, yeah, we've just got to change our bidding strategy. Or that is a really rubbish example from me. I'm trying to think what else I've said. Oh yeah, it'll increase our bids. I'm like, we don't, well, you do bid, but we don't really say that. So I wouldn't feel comfortable like setting up a campaign, but I would feel comfortable like looking at it and being like, yeah, it's not DPA, is it? Is it DPA? Is that right? No, it's not. It's really not. No, what is it? I know non-brand keywords for PPC. I know PLP?
PLA.
PLA. PLA.
It's too many acronyms, isn't it?
Exactly.
Too many acronyms these days.
Honestly, just get the whole word out. Yeah, I know that. And that's it. And then Amazon. Yeah, Amazon's a bit of a black hole for me. And then what's the other one? Display. Yeah. SI360 just really scares me. Like the platform, it just looks really complicated and there's a lot of numbers there and I actually don't know what 7x7 is, so it would not be very good for me. But yeah, what about you, Chris? What do you think you're...
I'll just say it's a good job you're good at paid social. After that overview of paid search, display and Amazon, thank goodness you can do paid social well, eh?
Promotion coming my way, PPC specialist.
Yeah, maybe 2023. So I grew up doing paid search. Well, I say grew up. That was my entry point into digital marketing. So I used to feel very, very confident in paid search. However, it's changed that much these days that I don't think I could run a campaign anymore. If I did, it would be a very, very basic old school campaign. Like, I don't know how to do product listing ads. I don't know how to do shopping. I did do DSA. That was about the last time I was like actively involved in running paid search. So yeah, that was always my specialism, but it's moved on so much that I couldn't even claim to have a specialism in PPC anymore.
So this is probably a really silly question considering I'm on Team DPM. What is the difference between paid search and PPC? Like, what does it... Is it the same thing? Yeah,
it's the same thing. So historically, it always used to be called PPC because it stands for pay-per-click, which is the advertising model that Google uses, where you pay per click. And then as the industry moved on, it started being referred to as paid search because there were some other options. It doesn't always have to be pay-per-click by now. So the terms are interchangeable and both kind of are referring to any activity that we run across, typically Google Ads or Microsoft Ads.
What? And you raised a really interesting point there about the measurability of digital paid media. And it feels like with like privacy updates and what have you, it's becoming less measurable. How's that being tackled and how big a challenge do you think that is?
Yeah, this is a pretty big challenge, not only from a measurement perspective, but also from a kind of targeting and strategy perspective. And because it's so new for the entire industry, no one's really figured it out. So we've started looking at options and it's one of the reasons why we started working with Flash Talking, who are an independent ad server and have a cookieless tracking option. But really, from a kind of Google perspective, they haven't really made any major announcements on it. They've got something called consent mode, which is where they try and kind of match back and kind of account for that discrepancy. But there hasn't really been any communication around kind of what it is going to look like and what that drop-off is really going to be. And so it's going to mean that it's all kind of slightly less targeted from a strategy perspective. So it means we're not going to be able to be as smart with kind of audiences and remarketing, because we're going to be grouping people into kind of more general buckets based on estimations, as opposed to, you know, we definitely know that this person has done this thing on the website. But I think with Google moving towards more of the automated campaign types anyway, and like getting rid of ETAs and that sort of thing, it's all moving in that way anyway, where it's kind of giving away that control and kind of letting the algorithms do their thing. And so I think in those cases, the data gap is going to be less impacted, because kind of the algorithms already are making decisions based on either what they have or assumptions, and that's only going to continue to happen.
And there's a lot of people reluctant to give over kind of full control to Google, aren't they? Because there's a lot of skepticism and cynicism about their intentions, I guess. And I'm sure we must have clients that raise these points. How do you counter that argument?
Typically it comes down to performance. So we've run quite a lot of tests this year on automation versus non-automated activity. And even when we go back down to having full control or kind of doing more manual levels of optimization, the automated activity always performs better. There hasn't been kind of a single case where we've been able to do it where the automation doesn't win. And I was really skeptical. So when Google announced their Performance Max campaign, I was very much like, I don't like the idea of just one campaign which runs across every property, and I don't have any control over where that shows or the targeting there. But all of the initial testing that we've done with Performance Max has been really good, and performance has been better than across our kind of existing campaigns. And it's driven more conversions for clients. And that's really then where we can't argue back. If it's driving those conversions at a better level, then ultimately that's what the client wants, and if that means we're using an automated campaign type, then that's what we'll use.
Yeah, I guess numbers speak for themselves, don't they? It's hard to argue against them. And I guess the other important point is an algorithm can look at so many data points that it's just impossible for a human to optimize against, isn't it? So
exactly,
the machines are going to win. We might as well just start preparing for Terminator 2 type.
Has this got any relation to when you bid on brand keywords and non-brand keywords? Or is that something completely different?
Well, it kind of, because it fits into our campaign structure. So typically we'll bid on keywords, whether they're brand or non-brand. And then we'll have other campaign types. So that's where shopping comes in, DSA, Performance Max, and kind of the automated campaign types there. And it's essentially just a slightly different way to target. So if you think about it in social, where you have an awareness consideration and conversion campaign, and they all target a slightly different audience, all of our campaigns in paid search just target slightly different keywords or different audiences or different websites that we want to appear on.
So do you do it in the same format that social would do it, where you have like broader keywords that, so say we were doing it for, I don't know, what sort of brand shall I just think of?
A clothing brand.
So if we were doing it for a clothing brand, would you have like your keywords in your top in your big campaign as like clothes, then women's clothes, then dresses?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Okay. So that makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, so you split up the campaigns in the same way. You group similar keywords together. And because when you group all of those keywords together, so if it's women's clothing, for example, then it means that the ads that show are then relevant and tailored towards women's clothing in their messaging.
So really, working on PPC, you've got to have like quite a large level of like creativity with like your keywords, I suppose. Because unless you're being supplied them by clients, you're going to have to think, like, I don't know, like lots of words.
Yeah, so campaign builds are quite a big part of it. Most of the clients and accounts that we work with now will already have an established account, so they'll already have loads of keywords in there which we can look at. Google provides kind of recommendations of broader keywords or slight variations on keywords that we haven't thought about, and then it's also just using the website and seeing kind of what is that product or service that the client is offering, and what might people be searching in Google, which tells us that they'd be interested in that product or service.
Okay.
There's lots of tools to do this for you, Liv. If you think about some of the big accounts, what have 100,000 keywords in? It's not like Alex has sat there and typed them all out from the top of his head. That'd be quite a lengthy job, wouldn't it?
You know what? I've learned a lot about PPC, so now I reckon I'm head up for that PPC specialist role. Yeah, it's good.
That PPC specialist role's coming in fast now. That's it. At the end of this podcast, you'll be set. So Sarah, with every guest, we're always interested in their journey into digital marketing and how you got into the position you're in now. So how did you end up working in PPC? How did you end up here? What was your path?
So my path, I went to uni and studied psychology with the plan to be a psychologist. And then I kind of changed my mind halfway through my degree. And decided that I potentially didn't want to go down the psychology route anymore. So then when I was graduating, I was just looking for kind of any job that I could go into. I hadn't really figured out what I wanted to do. But while I was at uni, I used to write a blog and run a little Etsy side business. So I was like, yeah, social media can't be that difficult. Like, I manage my own social, surely that's fine. So I was looking for jobs, and then I got a job as an internet marketing specialist at a really small agency. There were two of us that did the marketing for all of the clients. And I was multi-channel at that point, so we did everything. So SEO, paid, email, social, kind of everything across the mix. I did that for about a year, and I realised that I did quite enjoy marketing, but I wanted to go somewhere where I could get a little bit more of a kind of an understanding and training in the industry. So then I moved to iPro, where we worked. And again, stayed multi-channel there for a little bit. And then I figured out that paid was the channel that I enjoyed the most. And so that's the one that I then specialised into. And so, yeah, my background is in PPC. But over the years, I've done all of the four specialisms within DPM. And so, yeah, I just continued working with clients and working in agencies, and then joined Clickthrough last year.
I love it. I took all that in, but I've taken two key points out of that. One was a realisation that 50% of our guests have been from iPro, which I just think is really funny. And then the other thing that I took was Etsy shop. What were you selling?
This is super random, but I used to have a little Etsy shop where I would make and sell my own nail polish.
What the heck? What?
How do you even make nail polish? It should be on me.
So I used to buy the base, which was just like a clear solution, and then I would buy like powders and glitters, and then make up like a big batch of a certain colour. And I used to have like different collections. So like I did like a Mario collection, for example. So there was like a Mario themed nail varnish and a Princess Peach one. And then I used to bottle them all and put like my logo on it and post them out.
Two more questions from that. Completely not digital marketing based, but oh well. One, what was your business called?
Do you want me to answer that one before you? it was called Sarah Smiles, which is also a song title by one of my favourite bands.
Love it. Second question, other than like your collections, did you have to come up with like nail polish names like Sexy Midnight and stuff like that? Like,
yes. So I usually did them based on puns. So like the Mario collection, they were named after either like something that character said in the game, or it, I think the Mario one was called like everyone's favourite plumber.
Nice. I don't know. I love that.
Yeah?
I absolutely love that.
There you go. Not only have you learnt about PPC today, but if you've learnt about Sarah and your department.
Honestly, I'm so excited about that.
We should just rename the podcast Educating Lynch, shouldn't we? So going back to digital pay media and away from NailVarnish, what do you think, we've already touched on one of these, which is cookieless, which was a big thing at the start of the year, but what have some of the big points of interest in paid media been this year, some of the changes or trends that have happened, and what's the impact of them been?
Yeah, so it's been a bit of a weird year. So obviously cookieless was huge, and then with Google pushing back the cookieless future, it kind of put it on hold for a little bit, where people didn't have to think about it anymore. That's also been the major theme in social, with like the iOS tracking changes, and making sure that the Pixel is set up to be able to kind of bridge that gap as much as possible. And then I think one of the biggest changes for me within PPC was the removal of broad match modified keywords. So for the entire time that I've been building campaigns, it was always Exact and BMM. We never ran campaigns using any other keyword type. And that was always the option. So I think, like, I know a lot of people that I spoke to at the time, and myself included in this, we all assumed that phrase would be the one to go because that was the one that people weren't using. So it was a real surprise when Google kind of announced that they were getting rid of BMM instead and are now moving to phrase match. And there have been a couple of announcements recently which are similar. So the fact that expanded text ads are going from next year, so it'll be responsive search ads only. That's a big change to how we manage accounts. And also the fact that Performance Max is going to be taking over, and there'll be a point where you can't create a shopping campaign anymore or local campaigns because they'll all be combined within Performance Max. So there are going to be some big changes coming in terms of kind of just the general best practice and the way that we've always managed accounts, because that's not going to be the same anymore. But it's all moving towards that more automated, smarter, machine learning kind of cookie-less approach, which is where the entire industry is going.
I had a question. Basically, it's just helping me finalize that promotion. What is BMM, and what is the difference between that and phrase? Is it phrase?
Mm-hmm. Phrase, yeah. So they're both keyword match types. So kind of PPC activity was always based on keywords. So you would say, if someone searches for women's clothing, we want to show up an ad. But you could specify kind of how that search matched towards your keyword of women's clothing. So if your keyword was women's clothing on Exact Match, it would only match exactly when someone searches women's clothing. On phrase, it means that it can match broader. So if someone searches for red women's clothing, it would match your women's clothing phrase keyword. And BMM was broader again. So it meant that if someone searched for women's red clothing, it could like slot words in the middle. And it basically meant that if you knew you wanted to appear for women's clothing, but you didn't want to build out every single keyword variation around that because you don't know what people are going to be searching for, then it would match with things that were relevant to that, and it would mean that you could get more volume coming through without necessarily having thousands more keywords built out.
Got you. And is that a new thing, or is that something that's been around since the start of time?
No, match types have always been a thing. Keywords have always been a thing. And we always had those match types. And as I say, I was kind of raised and trained on doing Exact and BMM and that being the way forward. But as of middle of this year, it's now Exact and Phrase. And we've just transitioned into that as the option instead.
BMM didn't exist back in the day, Sarah, let me tell you.
Did it not?
Back in the days when you used to have to fax things over to to Google and Yahoo. I had to use a fax insertion orders to make sure we stayed online. I remember BMM coming in, so I was very sad to see its death as well. Mm-hmm. Why do you think BMM was removed? Because like you say, best practice across all, like everyone I know was Exact and BMM, wasn't it? That was pretty much industry standard.
Yeah, industry standard. I was really surprised, and I still don't really know why they've done it, because what it looks like they've done is they've just combined Phrase and BMM into one match type, which that's kind of fine. And there are a couple discrepancies. So what used to match with BMM, not everything will come through Phrase. But that's kind of basically what they've done. And so I'm just surprised that they went down the route towards Phrase rather than getting rid of Phrase and just refining BMM. Yeah. Slightly, but there's also been a big push on kind of the broad match type and kind of revitalizing that and potentially using that within accounts. So I think it's just a way to keep them a little bit more separate so that there are these kind of three distinct match types that you can use within the mix. And although everyone has kind of transitioned now to Exact and Phrase, it's now kind of Google's focus to try and get people using broad as well.
Do you think that in the next year or so, there's going to be, what do you think is coming? Do you think there's going to be lots more changes? I know you just said you thought Phrase would be the one to go. Do you reckon it will go? Mm-hmm. Do you reckon something else will be introduced?
Well, there is this is not really that radical anymore, but there's been kind of whisperings in the industry for a while that keywords will go. Altogether.
Really?
Which that would be the biggest change, really, because PPC's always been based on keywords and that we can control the searches that we're showing for. But Google have already demonstrated with moving towards like smart shopping and then not being able to see the search terms that you're appearing for, and now Performance Max, which is an even kind of further automated campaign. I think that's definitely where it's going to go, to the point where you would just have to set up like one Performance Max campaign and it would just run everything that we run at the moment as separate campaigns.
So everything would be like dynamic. So, but then I don't know, like this is like an existential question. Would like people who work in PPC currently, like jobs be on the line because the robots can do it?
Yeah, and I mean that's always been a debate between like why do we need people who kind of sit and optimize accounts when you can automate a lot of it now, and that's only going to continue. I guess it depends how far Google take that, but if they take it to a point where yes, you set up one campaign and that runs everything for you, then I don't think there would be a need for someone to sit and
there'll,
watch that.
There'll always be a need, won't there? It's just what they what they do will be will change, won't it? In the way that what I was doing as a PPC manager back in the day, probably no one does these days. But I think there'll always be a need for people to monitor their robots at the very least, won't there?
Yeah, just so that Google doesn't spend all your money.
Exactly. And how about in paid social, Liv? What do you think? Do you think there's going to be any big changes or trends coming up in social?
You know what? God, social changes every single day. And because it's like across platform and there's always like new and upcoming platforms. Well, there's not. But I reckon there'll be new and upcoming platforms that'll have like tracking caveats and stuff like that. But it's so difficult to predict because it's all like... So like Facebook introduced that iOS... the Cappy G after the iOS thing, but Twitter didn't introduce anything, neither did TikTok, neither did Snap, neither did Pin. So I think something will probably come around those types of things. But it's literally how long is a piece of string with like any question towards social, like there's no predicting it at all. And I feel like I'm not out the loop, but sometimes I get an email and I'm like, what the hell does that mean? Like, it's all these abbreviations, honestly, because it's like, and I'm like, right, okay, cool. So maybe there's like a massive update that's coming that I do know about, but I can't tell you about it because I don't understand it yet. I've just realised I'm making myself sound like I know nothing. This is so rubbish. nothing as of yet.
So, anything from your perspective on social, do you think?
Social is always, because it's always been audience based, it is just going to be that how much audience data can we access with privacy changes, and kind of how specific are we going to get with that? Because there is kind of the view that if that audience is estimated instead, that actually it's then likely that performance isn't going to be as good because we don't know if those people are as interested as we initially thought. So I think it's just going to be a case of getting smarter about how everything comes together and looking at that like attribution and measurement piece, which is always required if you're going to invest in multiple paid channels, but just making sure that kind of from that measurement perspective, you're kind of on that as much as possible and linking up the dots as much as possible so that we are able to see that the contribution that all of those different platforms are having to that overall goal for businesses.
And do you think with the increased difficulty of attribution, do you think that's going to lead to a cost reduction? Because if everyone's in the same boat, right? If everyone's mm-hmm. less able to attribute performance back to a channel, surely they'll be bidding less aggressively. Do you think we're going to see a downtrend in the cost competition, or do you think that's wishful thinking?
There's potential for that, but I think a lot of what we've seen with clients this year is still that really aggressive bidding, and where we typically see it is on kind of the non-brand terms and the more generic terms, which the chance of you getting conversions from that already are quite low because you're actively competing and you don't know if someone's searching for, let's use like used cars as an example, you don't know if someone's searching for that is just at the very start of their journey or they're just generally looking. And so going so hard on terms like that isn't really going to produce that much of a result at the end of it. And I think the fact that people are doing that now as it is, I don't know if that will massively change. I think it'll just be a difference in almost if the target was X when we had all of the information, now that we can only see part of that information, I think they'll just be tweaking with targets so that it kind of allows for that discrepancy.
I think that would be mirrored on social as well, because I feel like if people know what they're going to get at the end of it, and that's not going to be a fully tracked sort of like journey from A to B, I think a lot of people wouldn't want to move onto it, like onto social. But just because, like, the amount of clients that I have now that have been affected by, like, iOS 14 update and stuff like that is crazy. So if anything did come into the forefront, like, next year or whenever, I think it would affect everyone's input onto social as well. Which is mad, to be fair, because I feel like social media and just all paid media in general is such a big part of everyone's lives now, whether that's, like, advertising or just browsing. Crazy stuff. What about influencer marketing? So we, like on social, I know that influencer marketing is a big thing. You can't really mm-hmm. do it on PPC, can you?
No. So the only kind of times we've ever done it is just by using the either affiliation or the support with that influencer, obviously kind of within copy, or if that means that it's a new product launch, then obviously including those benefits and USPs, but no, not in the same way. And I think kind of advertising on Google has, you know, has, especially over the last few years, has become kind of more and more focused on transparency and making sure that the ads that we're showing are relevant and are appropriate for what the person is searching. And I don't think they would ever, that's never going to reduce or go anywhere. So I think it's only ever going to become a smaller part of advertising on PPC.
Yeah, definitely. Could you, in theory, serve an ad and make it look like it was from an influencer that's like related to your business. So the other day I got a text from Molly May offering me...
How'd you get your number?
Exactly, that's what I want to know. But she texts me anyway, bless her, and offered me 50% off Pretty Little Thing. Like, she's so kind and considerate to do that just to me. But could you say, like, Molly May, sponsored by, I don't know. Oh, I can't even think of a business, lol. Paper Chase, I don't know. Like, shop at Paper Chase, I don't know. Like, could you say that? Or is that illegal?
No, you could say it. You could put it in your ad copy. But I don't think it'd work. I don't think it'd work very well within the copy. And I think if you're going to start crossing over like brands and collabs, you then have questions about trademarking issues. Yeah. So that's always going to cause a bit of an issue. But no, I think when people are searching on Google, they're ultimately searching on Google because they want to find something. So they want to find an answer. They want to find a product. They want to find a solution. And so it's so much easier to get that if you just get straight to the point in terms of if someone's looking for women's clothing, here's an ad for women's clothing with new lines added daily or whatever it might be. So it's really easy then for the consumer to click through and find what they're looking for.
I think it would work. I think it'd be far less effective on paid search because obviously the key thing is that the people that see, we'll use Molly May as an example because she's a fantastic example of someone who's growing their own personal brand to then work with actual brands. But the people that see the stuff she does with Pretty Little Thing are fans of her. Like if I search Pretty Little Thing and there's something to do with Molly May, I do know who she is because I watched Love Island that year, but most other like influencers or stuff like that, there's a strong chance that people aren't going to know who they are. Whereas on social, you're specifically following that person, aren't you? So you've got to have, you've got an active interest in them already. Whereas with your paid search audience, there's a strong chance that people will just think, who's that? Because not all collaborations are with people that have done quite such a good job of it as Molly May has.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, something that's just, well, it's not just coming, but it's becoming a lot more popular on social at the minute is branded content. So if someone is whitelisted or blacklisted, I don't know which one it is, we can advertise from their account, but it would be a sponsored ad. So I know when I worked for another brand, we did one with like Eden Hazard and Harry Kane, which was obviously going to do well because the people that we were targeting knew who these people were. So I think you are dead on right there, Chris, that if the target audience that you are going to will know that person, they're more likely to engage. But I think that's a really interesting thing, that like the power of the people in marketing. Power of the people, that's a phrase, isn't it?
It is a phrase, yeah. So just thinking about paid media on a longer term perspective, obviously we're smack bang in the middle of peak for a lot of clients now. Does peak vary from channel to channel, or is it pretty consistent? And are there any peaks outside of like the Black Friday through to Christmas in the calendar year?
Peaks generally are the same channel to channel. The only one that does vary, I would say, is Amazon. Just because any time that Amazon does specific activations or promotions, that's just such a huge thing on that platform. But generally, peak tends to be the same across all channels. So when we are planning for peak, we plan how we're going to support it across all of them. So the thing that kind of more falls into that is just the differences in when peak is for different clients. So the kind of, obviously we've always got kind of Black Friday and Christmas for e-com clients, but then when we look at kind of lead gen clients, their peaks tend to be at different times across the year. And then what we'll do is kind of plan that we know there's going to be either that increased level of volume or interest or activity for that client, and then plan activations across all the channels accordingly.
Yeah, no, definitely. Do you, this is like taking out the fact that you could literally phone your client and ask them, would you find it, well, not would you, do you find it really difficult to plan for a client's peak when, like, every client that you deal with is so different? And, like, managing that time. So, obviously, if you're dealing with, like you said, a car brand versus a fashion brand, I think their peak times are going to be very, very, like, different. So, like, Black Friday for fashion, maybe January for a car, I don't know.
Yeah. No, generally it's okay because it is industry peaks. So, although kind of obviously clients will always have specifics in terms of when they want to launch or what offers are going live at what time, you got it there that, like, car brands, the peak is like January and September time because that's when new cars get released, so that's when people are naturally looking. So it would mean that as long as you've kind of worked in that industry, you then can get a sense for when peak is, and then it means it's probably going to be pretty similar across all of the clients that are within that industry to plan for. But it does mean that, like we have been saying quite a lot in DPM at the moment, that like Black Friday, November, December is the busiest period. And if you can get through that, then that's like the busiest you're ever going to be. But actually, a lot of our clients are going into peak in January because we have a couple of industries that go into peak in January. So there isn't really ever a quieter period because when it's not peak for one client, it's peak for someone else. So it's just balancing that across the year.
And if you, well, this is... Obviously, I'm in paid media as well, so I think I already know the answer to this. But as a question, how have your results reflected from last year? So obviously, last year we were in lockdown or a pandemic or whatever, and this year we're sort of out of it, but might be going back into it. So what did your results over like Black Friday say? Like, were they good? Were they bad? Or did it just differ for each client?
It was a pretty challenging comparison to make. And I know for the clients that I worked with on last year's Black Friday, I remember saying this at the time. I remember saying, like, this is the performance for this year, but it's going to be really challenging to compare next year. Because last year, consumer behaviour was so different and people were behaving so differently. And because people were at home, there was so much more kind of online shopping and spending and, you know, people kind of entertaining at home and then needing things for that. And so what I would say, and this is kind of generally across the board, 2021 didn't perform as well as 2020. What we typically found was that clients were spending kind of the same or more. So it was just as competitive. There were just as many people on the landscape, but we just weren't seeing the same level of conversions. So there weren't as many conversions coming through. But when we compare 2021 with 2019, so there's kind of the best like for like year on year experience kind of comparison we can make, their typically performance is up and 2021 was better than 2019. So we are seeing that growth that we typically see year on year for clients. But just 2020 was such an anomaly in terms of performance that it's been really difficult to benchmark against.
It seemed like a lot of people planned for year on year growth from 2020 to 2021, even though we knew it was going to be a struggle, but therefore everyone took the same budget at it. So it was competitive, but the consumers were probably more out shopping in the real world than they were online this year, weren't they? So yeah, and it seems like we plan every single year in digital for year-on-year growth because digital's been growing since the dawn of time. It's got to slow down at some point, hasn't it? And that, yeah. It seems unrealistic to just keep expecting year-on-year growth year after year after year. So we've touched on Black Friday a little bit, haven't we? But how was it for you both this year? How was the experience? Anything you've been able to... Any learnings you've been able to take away from this Black Friday and peak that you can take into next year?
So I really enjoyed Black Friday this year. It's my favourite week. From working in
you
digital.
You psychopath.
I know. But it's my favourite week because typically all of the hard work is done in the first 3 weeks of November, and the actual week of Black Friday is typically much more relaxed because if you've kind of been sent everything and you're set up and everything's ready to just switch over, then you're kind of in a pretty good place for Black Friday. But one of the other things I loved that we did here at Click Through is that we made a bit of a day of it. And so I've never really done this at other agencies. This actually came from Alex, who's one of the specialists in the team. And his experience of Black Friday has always been like coming into the office, getting food, just watching revenue roll in, which is why we decided to do it this year. So we got all of the team into the office. I ordered pizzas, we got drinks in for the afternoon, and it was actually really nice to do. And it meant that all of that hard work throughout kind of end of October and early November, it then felt like we had one day to just kind of celebrate and take a bit of a step back and have a bit of a breather and just, well, as Chris said at the beginning, have a bit of a then blowout afterwards.
I guess if what you're planning's spot on, right, actual Black Friday should be
chill, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe not chill.
For me, with Black Friday, this was my first Black Friday managing my own clients, dealing with my own time, dealing with my apprentice's time, and it was such a balance. And I think, and because I had a week off before Black Friday, because I'm an idiot, I was like, oh, the week off, but then realised, okay, you've actually been really organised and everything sorted. So on the Friday, it was just sort of like checking in with clients, just saying, are you okay? Do you need any help with anything? And it was really lovely. And I can remember thinking, sat in the office and like everyone was having a laugh, I was thinking, you know what, like, in a few years down the line, if I ever leave Click Through, if I'm ever in another job, or if I'm sort of like training someone else, I'll remember this day. This is how cringy I am. I will remember this day and I'll be like, oh, that's such a nice day, because it was genuinely like such a lovely feeling, just like watching revenue come in and just thinking, yeah, it's worked. And I was like texting clients and be like, yeah, we've already hit this number, and they were like, oh my god. So it was really nice, and it just meant that like all the work that we'd done in November leading up to, because Black Friday starts in bloody September this year, that it was all sort of like coming to a finish. But then I suppose it doesn't come to a finish because Cyber Monday is becoming a big thing now. But yeah, it was lovely. It was really nice.
All your hard work came to fruition. But we definitely probably need to ban holiday the week before Black Friday next year as well.
Probably, yeah.
And on a personal level, how much do you spend on Black Friday?
Disgusting amounts. Like does anyone use Klarna? Hashtag sponsored. Klarna is the death of me. I've got currently like a £250/£300 Klarna bill that I've got to pay off in January. No, I haven't. I've got to pay off in a minute.
Go on.
Didn't you buy something on Black Friday that wasn't in the Black Friday sale? But you just used Black Friday as an excuse.
Yeah. I was like, woo, get me some Converse. Yeah, and they were like, they're these special Converse, Chris. They are Comme des Garçons Converse. And I was like, I'm going to get something Black Friday sale. And then they were full price. And I was like, yeah, it's Black Friday. It's fine.
Get it anyway.
Yeah. So.
How about you, Sarah? Did you spend much?
No, I didn't go too crazy. I was as a like plan B, ordered a Christmas party dress, even though at this point I wasn't going to the Christmas party, but just in case. So then I ordered a few extra bits from that clothing company, but past that, no. What about you, Chris?
I'll be honest, I really can't be bothered with Black Friday sales. And like, they're just, yeah, I bought one thing off Amazon because a notification popped up on my phone, and it's a Lego set for one of the kids for Christmas. Aww. Which I was going to get anyway, and then the thing came up and it had about £5 off, so I was like, okay, I'll just get it. But I didn't do any Black Friday shopping. I didn't go on a single website beyond that because I just can't be bothered.
What Lego set is it?
Ninjago for the Lego enthusiasts.
Love so, yeah. That I really want to get into Lego. Exciting. But I just don't have the concentration. I actually think I've got ADHD. Like,
it's perfect for stuff like that, though. It's so therapeutic building Lego sets.
I've got...
And there's a guy on TikTok that's got he must have the biggest Lego collection in the world. You need to find him. He's got like a basement just full of it. That can be your life aspiration, Liv.
Really?
A basement full of Lego.
I've seen the ones where you might like a bonsai tray, and I think I'd quite like to do that. But then I searched how much it was, and it was like £80, and I was like, just nah. I can't.
But you can buy a real one for less.
Give me those Converse.
Exactly. but yeah.
And do you guys think there's more to Black Friday than meets the eye? Like, you hear a lot of warnings about like spoof deals and products that are sometimes actual Black Friday deals that aren't deals. What's your experience with that? What do you think?
Yeah, I think this is something that happens. It's worse at Black Friday, but it happens whenever there's going to be a big sale. Companies just like put the prices up a little bit so that then when you see the percentage drop, it looks like it's bigger than it potentially was because the product was cheaper before. It's a pretty smart way to do it. And it doesn't surprise me that companies do it. And I think despite companies doing that, people always kind of just are going to get wrapped up in sales and Black Friday anyway, because there's so much being thrown at you and there's so much kind of FOMO messaging and offers that I think people are always going to buy into that, no matter what the kind of saving is.
Yeah, I agree. I'm also that person that just shops on Black Friday because I think it's a really good deal, as evidenced by the Converse that had no money off whatsoever.
You just totally fall for it, Liv.
Yeah. I am literally every company's dream.
You're the marketer's dream. You fall for everything.
Honestly, well, if we could just choose me as an audience.
let me share a website with you. It says there's a website called Camel Camel Camel. Weirdest website name ever. But it tracks prices on Amazon. So if you ever see anything on sale on Amazon, you can go on there and it shows you like the price plotted on a graph for the last 12 months, 24 months, so you can see if it's actually like a proper sale or not. And also, if you're looking at buying something, you can see if it's been cheaper in the past, because you know it might be reducing price. So there you go.
Wow.
There's a top tip for you, Liv. Camel, camel, camel.
I don't know
why they picked that name. It's weird. So obviously November's gone, Sarah, Black Friday's done and dusted, but Christmas is still around the corner. Still loads of work to do in paid media. But are there any kind of common mistakes you ever see in the run up to the Christmas period in the way people approach it?
I think what tends to happen is I think people just almost forget that it is around the corner and there's not that much time. And there is quite a lot of opportunity across December. I think people are very focused on getting kind of Black Friday and Cyber Monday and Cyber Week out of the way. But actually then we need to be really responsive to then switching that messaging. So either to gifting, if that's relevant, or another one that works really well is the Christmas delivery cutoff date. But it's something that you need to be really on to get up and running in time, because there is only a couple weeks until that cutoff happens, and people then can't order before Christmas. And I think it's just continuing to understand the complexities of it, because obviously Black Friday and Cyber Monday is massive for so many reasons. But one of the reasons from a DPM perspective is that there are so many messaging changeovers. So for one client, we did like 6 messaging changeovers over the 4 days. So it's really intense to get everything ready and to get everything up. And then I think when people compare that to winter sale, it's then much more likely that they'll get like one ad copy variant up and that'll run. And it's almost remembering those same tricks from Black Friday. So the FOMO messaging works, and you know, switching up that messaging works. So how can we apply that against kind of winter sale and Christmas to take advantage of that time as well?
Do you, on PPC and all other paid channels that I don't really know that well, have learning phases? So if you change anything, it goes into learning phase?
Yeah, there are learning phases on all of the platforms, where the ads just need to get data. So that's for both PPC and display, so that they can just optimize effectively, because until we've got data, we don't know which ad is going to perform better. So it's then difficult to make changes based on that. So yeah, there's always that learning period. So it's that handshake between wanting to change the message really frequently, but then also giving the ads enough time so that they can optimize effectively and they can do what they need to do within the account.
Yeah, I think something that we saw on social was that clients were wanting to push like messaging changes like a lot of time, like a lot of times, Jesus Christ, many times throughout the day. But every time we changed something, it would re-enter into learning. So there was such a pushback on like us saying like, we can, but we wouldn't recommend it. So I reckon that was probably the exact same for you then, if you also have learning phases. Crazy stuff.
Cool. So we've obviously talked about your background in psychology, Sarah, and your qualification there. You also worked in a role doing training and development prior to joining here, didn't you? How do you think that's benefited you in your role, and why do you think that's so important for a digital marketing agency?
Yeah, so I remember like when I first made my jump from psychology to digital marketing, everyone would always say, oh, it's a bit weird, isn't it? Like, is your degree just pointless? And I made this really big point of like not wanting my degree to feel pointless, and me wanting to take the learnings from that. And I think both have been really valuable for different reasons. So I really like my psychology background because the reason why I did my psychology degree is because I'm just really interested in how people work and ultimately why they behave the way that they do. And I feel like my entire job as a marketer is to look at how people behave and encourage them to take a certain behavior or a certain action. And if I can understand why people would take that action and what would motivate them to get to that point, then I think it means that I can kind of factor that into the activity that I'm running, and I can use those ultimately what are the basics of human behavior to influence back and encourage those people to make those changes. And then from a training and development perspective, this really helps in my kind of current role. So digital paid media is a pretty big department. There are a fair few of us working in DPM, and that means lots of different people, lots of different personalities, lots of different learning types. And because we bring in people at all levels, it's just looking at the best way that I can support them, and ultimately kind of provide them with what they need, whether that's technical knowledge or workload advice or whatever that might be. But kind of it just makes me think about things differently, and I kind of approach things differently now based on what I know about those people and, you know, how I think it's best going to come across with those people.
Brilliant. Well, I think we're running out of time, unfortunately. We've had a deep dive into DPM, but before we wrap up, first of all, Liv, I've got to know, what would your specialist subject be if you were to go on Mastermind?
Mine's really
sad. I'm kind of
sad.
Worried about what the answer is.
No, it's really sad, and I'm really hoping that my boyfriend doesn't listen to this because he will call me a saddo, but it's RuPaul's Drag Race. I love it. I absolutely love it. And my cousin bought me some Drag Race Top Trumps the other day. And instead of Top Trumps in, because she didn't know who any of these people were, she just quizzed me on them. So she was like, charisma, 10, talent, 2. And I was like, just so yeah, Drag Race, any, just US or UK, I'm all over it. I'm all over it. Yours would be The Office, obviously. Yeah?
It would. Although, I've watched Harry Potter now.
Oh, all of them?
No, just the first one.
Oh.
And I've been to Harry Potter World. So
what? All this since last podcast?
I've made big steps in the world of Harry Potter.
What the hell,
yeah.
Everyone? Come on. Send them up to Chris.
Before going to Harry Potter World, I only watched the first hour and then finished watching the film last week. So, like, we're wandering around Harry Potter World. I still didn't know what most of the stuff was, but the kids loved it. So, yeah. Maybe it'd be Harry Potter in the future. I doubt it. We can't finish before we talk about your challenge either, Liv.
No, that is true.
We were talking content last time, weren't we?
Yeah.
And your challenge was to go viral.
Yeah.
How did that go? Tell me all about it. I've deliberately refrained from asking you for the last month and a bit. It's been killing me, so I need to know.
So, update, I went viral the day we recorded the podcast. So I was told by another member of the team that I sounded like my favourite comedian, Guz Khan, and Guz Khan's from Coventry, and he has a really, really thick West Midlands accent, and listeners of the podcast, I don't know if you know this, but so do I. So I put a picture on of Guz Khan, and I was like, just been told, oh, I sound like Guz Khan, brilliant news, basically. And then he reposted it and was like, this is the best thing ever. And I'd never got so many views on my story. I think I got like 10,000 people like who don't follow me, like view my story. I purposely made my Instagram account unprivate so I could get these views. I had a look at like votes on my polls. I was like, yes. And then as soon as it happened, I just forwarded it to Chris and was like, lol.
too easy that one, wasn't it?
It was, a little bit.
So we're making this challenge slightly harder.
Mm-hmm.
Given we've got a festive theme, your challenge this month is a fundraising challenge.
It is.
To raise money to buy toys for kids that won't have a normal Christmas this year. So we'll talk next time about... I know we slightly cheated this time, so I told you about it in advance to give you a bit more time, didn't I?
Yeah.
But next time we'll catch up on how that went and how you did it. So yeah, we'll keep that for next time. Now, it wouldn't be a podcast without Liv's random question to wrap up on, would it? This excites and terrifies me in equal measure. So yeah, over to you, Liv.
Okay, well, I'm sort of cheating because I've got two, but the first one is what we were talking about earlier with the plane. So, riddle is, there was a plane crash and every single person died. Who survived? And just for context, we are on a video call right now and Sarah and Chris look very confused.
Say it one more time.
There was a plane crash and every single person died. Who survived?
The married people.
Oh, well done. Lovely. Okay, cool. Nice.
That's not the one I was thinking of.
No, there's one where it's like... I found that. It was like, okay, you are going over the border and the plane crashes. Who survives? I don't know what that one was, but I'll find that for next time. Anyway, this one is a bit of a personal question, but it's not really. So I was struggling to sleep over Black Friday due to stress. So I was finding out like different techniques. So... there was like a breathing technique and there was lots of other techniques. Like the one that I'm trying at the moment is you have to stay still, like completely still, you can't move, and then you have to count to 300, which obviously is a struggle. One, because I have ADHD and I don't stop moving. Two, because I can't count. So have you got any like sleeping tricks and tips that you guys use?
Go on, Sarah, you go first.
Yeah, so I have like a full evening routine to help with like the wind down for sleep. But the two things I do is I will always meditate before sleep. So when I'm like lying in bed to kind of clear my head of everything. And then usually I transition that into listening to a soundscape, which is usually rain, because that's the one that I find most relaxing. So yeah, I just fall asleep every night to the sound of rain. It's even better if it's actually raining outside, because then it saves me having to put it on my phone.
Wow.
But yeah.
Nice. Christopher?
So yeah, I have two techniques. The first one is I use the thing on my phone, so it goes like a softer colour at 10.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know it?
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember what the feature's called. Yeah, something like that, so because of the blue light and stuff. The other one is run a digital marketing agency and have two young kids. So by the time you get to bed, you're absolutely exhausted. And I have no problem falling asleep whatsoever. As soon as my head hits the pillow, that's it.
Really?
I'm done, yeah, absolutely done in by the end of the day. Yeah. So there you go.
Crazy stuff.
And that's my tip. So that brings us to the end of the episode and the end of 2021. We're back in the new year with another episode of the Assorted Digital Ramblings podcast, where we're going to be talking the exciting world of PR and outreach with our head of PR, Jenny, who is Swedish. So I'm going to prepare a Swedish quiz for you, Liv, to test your...
A Swedish quiz for me?
Yeah, I'm going to test your Sweden knowledge at the start of the podcast, so get revising. If you enjoyed this episode or any of the series so far, make sure to subscribe or follow us on the platform of your choice. Leave a review, 5 stars only, obviously. And we appreciate all of your feedback. You can follow Click Through Marketing on Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram and more, and find out information via our website, which is about to be relaunched excitingly, clickthrough-marketing.com. Thank you, Sarah, for joining us. Thanks, Liv. It's been a pleasure as always, and we'll see you all in January.
Pleasure. Merry Christmas, everyone.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.